The Irish Times, election 2011.
I'm Hugh Linehan. You're listening to the Irish Times election 2011 podcast. Later, Paddy Smith will be telling us about the intricacies of the PRSTV system and how best to use your vote. But first, Harry McGee joins us to look at five key battlegrounds in the count on Saturday.
Yes, five weather vane constituencies, many constituencies, which will be interesting. I had thought that only one constituency would remain unchanged in terms of personnel, but I've had to revise that opinion in the last week. That was Cork South Central, where Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin and a very strong Fianna Fáil TD Michael McGrath are standing. There are two Fine Gaelers there present, plus a Labour Party representative. I thought the status quo would prevail there, but I have had to revise my opinion in the last week.
Based
just really on the polls and on the way that the campaign has gone. And there does seem to be a very strong wind behind Fine Gael. So I'm actually saying that Fianna Fáil will probably lose a seat there at the expense of Fine Gael. But that's not actually one of the constituencies I've picked. But I was saying that it was the only one that I thought would remain unchanged. Each constituency will be interesting. The five I picked are geographically representative and also are good bellwether stroke weather vane constituencies. So the first I've picked is the adjacent constituency in Cork North Central, which is a four-seater, very interesting constituency in that it mixes working-class urban, some middle-class urban, and a very, very large rural hinterland north of Cork City. And of course, it's the constituency of Jack Lynch, and it had, in the last Dáil, it had two outgoing Fianna Fáil TDs, one representative from Fine Gael and one from the Labour Party. Two have retired, Noel O'Flynn and Bernard Allen from the Labour Party. So there are two seats up for grabs.
Bernard Allen from Fine Gael and Noel O'Flynn from Fianna Fáil.
So I think that this constituency will tell us a lot about the state of Fianna Fáil. If Fianna Fáil lose this constituency, they're going to have a very, very bad election campaign. It will also show us the strength, the comparative strengths of Sinn Féin and the smaller ULA party.
Because there's a strong left-wing and Sinn Féin vote predicted in this constituency. It's where the Irish Times did one of its local constituency polls, isn't it?
It is indeed. And Jonathan O'Brien was tipped to win a seat in 2007. He's been in that constituency since 2000. He's a ground-up type of operator, a little bit like Sean Crowe in Dublin South West. He has built up a base based really on his local work, and he would be seen very much as a constituency representative rather than a national figure in terms of Sinn Féin. He acquired critical mass in 2007, but the tide turned against Sinn Féin in the last week of the campaign, and it meant that people like Jonathan O'Brien, Pádraig McLoughlin and Piers Doherty and Mary Lou MacDonald indeed all lost out to Fianna Fáil candidates. He has 3,500 votes, nearly 4,000 votes behind him, and I think that he will add 2,000 or 3,000 this time round and will be comfortably elected. I think Kathleen Lynch of the Labour Party, the sitting TD, will probably top the poll and may have enough to help bring in a second candidate. Fine Gael have two strong candidates. I think Dara Murphy, who's the Mayor of Cork, will probably be their lead candidate. They will get one seat. And then the last seat, I think, will be the interesting one. If Billy Kelleher from Fianna Fáil survives, the sole Fianna Fáil candidate survives, you can expect that Fianna Fáil will do comparatively well. And when I say comparatively well compared...
Means not a complete wipeout.
Yeah, compared to the situation in January where they looked like they might only have 10 TDs left after going in with 71. If Kelleher survives, it mightn't be a bad day for Fianna Fáil. If he loses, I think Fianna Fáil are facing a meltdown situation. And we'll also see this other phenomenon which is happening, complete transformation in terms of independent candidates and candidates from the smaller parties. Mick Barry, the Socialist Party representative down there, part of the ULA umbrella, if he gets in, they could get maybe
it's going to be a good day for a left independent.
I reckon between the ULA and independents there will be at least 20 TDs out of 166 in the next Dáil.
Okay, and in fact, speaking of independents, moving on to the South East and Wexford, Mick Wallace, who was a very late entrant to the race, only a few days, I think, before nominations closed, I see the bookies are saying he's going to make it.
Indeed, and I have no doubt that he will make it. I think he fits the right profile. He has a very high national and local recognisability. People know him everywhere. and know him as the honest developer. He has managed to buck the trend in terms of our image of what developers are and what developers do. He's very well known in the constituency. He's been very involved in soccer down there, essentially, and in building up soccer teams and putting a lot of money into soccer and into youth development down there. And he is a kind of one of those identifiable, charismatic individuals who has a lot to say, who's become very involved in political causes. He used to drape banners over the sides of his building asking people to protest against the invasion of Iraq. So he's always been very political. He has canvassed in a day-glow flamingo pink football top.
He is the country's most unusual developer, I think.
He is, and almost the most unusual candidate. But there is one person who is more unusual. I think Luke Ming Flanagan in Roscommon is perhaps slightly more weird, but also just as astute politically. And I too think that he will get elected. So,
just to go back to Wexford, though, I mean, Mick Wallace coming out of left field literally at the last moment. Whose seat is he going to take there in terms of what the prediction would have been before that?
I think he'll take one of the Fianna Fáil seats. There is a tradition for independents in Wexford. Liam Toomey, who's now at Fine Gael, he was elected to Dáil Éireann in 2002 as an independent candidate and subsequently joined Fine Gael. So there is a tradition for supporting left-wing candidates. My own read is that there will be one Labour Party TD. We'll have three Fine Gael TDs. Two Fine Gael TDs and Mick Wallace. John Brown from Fianna Fáil, I think, will survive.
So that's Sean Connick gone.
Sean Connick gone. And Fine Gael might have had a chance of winning three seats in that constituency. I think Wallace, by his candidature, might scupper that particular chance.
And Labour might have had some hope at some point when the Gilmore gale was blowing of going for two there.
Two, yeah. And they were geographically well spread. The second Labour Party candidate is in the north of the county. Brendan Howland, of course, is based in Wexford Town, which is down in the south. And when Labour were 30 or 31% in the polls, it looked like they may have had a chance. But I think it's Fine Gael's election in Wexford
A lot of people have talked about Portillo moments that might happen in this election. In other words, senior cabinet ministers of the first rank who we might see having to stand up and accept the fact that the electorate have said, no, you're not going back to the Dáil the next time. And very highly ranked among those would be Mary Hanafin in Dunleary. She certainly has a tough fight in her hands. And also Barry Andrews, another member of the Fianna Fáil front bench.
Yeah, the Portillo moment might come in the next constituency we talk about after that. But Dunleary, there are two very high-ranking Fianna Fáilers, both standing. Everybody accepts that the most that Fianna Fáil can expect in Dunleary is to get one seat out of four. It's an interesting constituency in that it has been reduced from a five-seater to a four-seater. So there was always going to be squeezage. Somebody was going to lose out.
Well, Kieran Cuff is straight out the door anyway, so that partly deals with that.
Yeah, and I think the Green Party acknowledged that he's a goner. And the last opinion poll indeed that the Irish Times had showed that he was only on 4% of the vote. 4% of the vote is not going to get him anywhere. He's going to be eliminated very early.
Would also be a constituency in which both Fine Gael and Labour would hope to make gains.
Well, this is it. It will tell us three things. First thing it will tell us is how extensive is the Fianna Fáil meltdown. If Fianna Fáil succeed in winning a seat in Dunleary, that will be considered to be a relative success for the party, because the predictions for the party in the capital are woeful, three seats or less. And some people are saying that they might even only win one seat. And there are some people who are now beginning to say they might win zero seats. So if they win a seat in Dunleary, it will be considered to be a victory. The other interesting trend is to see that the dogfight between Fine Gael and Labour for hegemony in the city, and Dunleary will be one of the important constituencies in that regard. It looks like Fine Gael's strong surge in the opinion polls in recent weeks will be reflected in Dunleary. I think they're going to get two seats out of four. The question is, can Labour stop the rot and stem the tide and manage to show almost as strongly in the capital? And if they do, they will get the other two seats, with Eamon Gilmore bringing in his running mate, Ivana Bacic.
Vote management will be very important in that, won't it? Because if you get a huge vote for Eamon Gilmore and a low vote for Ivana Bacic, don't forget Richard Boyd Barrett is in the mix there in terms of where he's standing.
True. In single transferable vote, pure, the most important thing if you're running multiple candidates is to try to equalise them as much as possible, that there isn't too much of a distortion between candidates. And the best example of that in the most recent election was in Limerick East, the constituency that was, when Willie O'Dea got 2.7 quotas and his running mate Peter Power got 0.6. So they had 2.9, nearly almost...
Oh, always worked for Bertie Ahern and Cyprian Brady, though.
Yeah, but they should have got 3 seats out of that. But because the candidates were so divided in terms of the comparative vote they got, they didn't maximise their chances. The difficulty that Fine Gael might have in Dún Laoghaire is that Sean Barrett would get so many votes that Mary Mitchell O'Connor might suffer as a consequence. But I think that the tide behind Fine Gael is so strong in Dún Laoghaire that they will get 2. The question will be if Eamon Gilmore can minimise his vote a little to bring Ivana Bacsik up, she will have a very good chance. Because Richard Boyd Barrett, if he stays ahead of her, will win the seat. Richard Boyd Barrett's big difficulty will be in attracting transfers from other candidates. So he will need to stay ahead.
Now, Portillo moment. Dublin West, Brian Lenehan. Now, up until fairly recently, the perception has been that in Dublin, among the few seats that might be safe is Brian Lenehan, partly because he has a very strong popular following in his constituency of Dublin West, and also because the constituency is increasing from 3 seats to 4.
That's it. It was a dogfight the last time round because Joe Higgins said 4 very high-profile candidates, Leo Varadkar, Joan Burton, Brian Lenehan and Joe Higgins. And Joe Higgins was the person who lost out to Joan Burton, as it happened in the end. So with an extra seat being added to the constituency, it was expected it would be one of the most predictable that the 3 sitting TDs would be elected and Joe Higgins would get in there as well. And also helped by the fact that there's a relatively small slate in Dublin West. There aren't any independents running. And the only other candidates are second candidates, really, from the other parties, plus a couple of representatives from minor parties, none of which really have a chance of getting in. But the tide going against Fianna Fáil has been so strong in the capital. The last poll that we did showed that Fianna Fáil support was at 11% in Dublin. And even with incumbency, even with the fact that he's a Lenehan, there are doubts that he can get anywhere near the 20% that's required for him to win the seat.
And who would be threatening that seat, threatening to take that seat?
Well, the second Fine Gael candidate and also a young Labour Party councillor called Pat McNulty, who's based up in Muldhoddard, Corduff, would pose a threat to that seat. They weren't really seen as having any real hope of winning the seat, but news has been filtering through from the constituency that Brian Lenehan could be in trouble as well, that he could only get 14 or 15%.
Maybe you could enlighten me on my ignorance here. You know, in other seats on the periphery of Dublin, in the new Dublin, if you like, the new housing estates and northwest and northeast and southwest, Sinn Féin are challenging for a seat. Why are they not challenging in this quite similar constituency?
They've had difficulties in this constituency. They had a very strong representative there called Felix Gallagher, who I think was co-opted onto Fingal Council. He wasn't elected himself, but he had built up a base. And then peremptorily, almost within months of the 2007 general election where he stood, he upped sticks and left the party and essentially left them in the lurch. They have found a substitute candidate in the meantime, but he hasn't really made any mark. He didn't get elected in the 2009 local elections and hasn't really made an imprint there. I suppose the left has been well represented there by Joan Burton and by Joe Higgins, both of whom are national figures with really strong profiles. And they have tended to hoover up the left-wing vote there, stroke Republican vote. And I think you can see the same phenomenon in Dublin North, where the Socialist Party candidate Claire Daly has been the person in place to go in there and to take the left-wing vote. Mm-hmm. So I think in places where others got in before them, Sinn Féin have had difficulty in establishing themselves. I think that when Sinn Féin went in there early and started working on the working class stroke left-wing vote, they have done well. Right. The likes of Sean Crowe and Talla would be a very good example of that. But when others like Joe Higgins and Claire Daly got in early, I think they really thwarted Sinn Féin from making any significant advances.
Speaking of Sinn Féin, the newest member of the outgoing Dáil, Piers Doherty, is standing again for election within 2 or 3 months of winning his seat for the first time, and seems a shoe-in in Donegal South West. The big shock, you know, it would be a huge shock in a constituency like Donegal South West, is some implication that the Taoiseach Mary Coughlin might lose her seat.
That's right. This might go down to poor strategy by Fianna Fáil. They're running two candidates in the election, Mary Coughlan and Brian O'Donnell, the senator who stood in the by-election. And there is a feeling abroad at the present that that might have been an unwise strategy. Donegal South West is a small three-seat constituency that has not been as predictable in the past as one would think, given that it's always been a Fianna Fáil stronghold. There was a candidate who got elected there in 1997, Tom Gildee.
A TV deflector candidate.
TV deflector candidate. So it shows the fickleness of the Irish electorate.
Or the priorities.
It's Sinn Féin are going to double their seats in this election. Donegal South West is one of the places where they will show their increasing presence in southern politics, as they will in Donegal North East, where Pádraig McLoughlin should take a seat for them. It'll also show that the Labour Party strategy of grafting on to other organisations or choosing well-known candidates to stand in places where it didn't really have any presence hasn't really worked. And Frank McBearty Jr. is standing for them here. I don't think he's going to make any mark. And you'll see that other candidates that the Labour Party has chosen in weak Labour Party constituencies, like Gerry Cowley, like May Sexton, like John Kelly in Roscommon South Leitrim, Michael McNamara, might do it in Clare, but I don't think so. All these candidates that have been grafted on to the Labour ticket, I don't think that strategy worked for them.
And in fact, you know, Labour at the last minute made an approach to Thomas Pringle, the independent, who performed very well in the by-election and is in with a definite shout.
Exactly. And well, this is the other interesting thing about Dublin South West. He did extraordinarily well in the by-election with a shoestring budget. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that Mary Coughlan will lose her seat to Thomas Pringle, who's from the same neck of the woods. He's based in Killybegs. She's based down near Ardra in the southern part of the constituency. And that will be redolent of a pattern where many independents, because of the voter volatility, because people have been moving away to Fianna Fáil, haven't been sure where to put their votes, they have been reciling a lot of their votes in independent candidates. And I think that if he is elected, Thomas Pringle will be one of about 16 or 17 TDs with no party banner who will be coming back to the next Dáil. And that's why actually Micheál Martin yesterday, in his eve of polling day statement, concentrated his attention so much on asking people who are thinking of voting independent to vote for Fianna Fáil, because Fianna Fáil is as vulnerable to independent candidates as it is to Sinn Féin at present.
Well, there you have it. Five fascinating weather vane constituencies. But what's just as fascinating, it seems to me, is what you said at the outset, that you're not predicting that any constituency will return the same members as the last time. I would guess that that's probably unprecedented in the history of the state.
Absolutely. And we'll have more new TDs in the Dáil than at any time since 1926, 1927.
It's going to be really interesting. And we'll be covering it throughout the weekend from 8 o'clock on Saturday morning.
The Irish Times, election 2011.
Now, after 3 weeks of campaigning, endless talk, it's all over, it's time to vote, the polling stations are open, and we have, in many people's view, one of the more complex electoral systems in the world. One wonders sometimes if everybody understands the voting system when they go in to vote. I'm joined by Paddy Smith to go through, I suppose, some of the vagaries of the Irish PR STV voting system, Paddy, and how well to use your vote. I suppose, first of all, what is PR STV?
Well, PR STV in the multi-seat constituency, to give it its full grandiose title, is a system which is actually very simple to use. It may be more simple, more complicated to count or to operate as a political party in terms of maximising the benefit for it. But in terms of the individual voter, it's extremely simple. It's a system that is used in very few other places, notably in some Australian Indian elections and in Malta. And over the last few years in Scottish and British regional elections in Northern Ireland. So it's a relatively rare system. Its main feature is that it is proportional, that is to say that there is a pretty good relationship between how people vote and the number of seats that their favourite parties will get. Although it is not completely proportional, there is a system that the Israelis use called the list system, which is much more proportional. And there's a system used by the Germans, which is favoured by a number of Irish parties, which balances a list system with proportional voting in single-seat constituencies. And this is, again, much more proportional, directly proportional. The Irish system is a good compromise because it gives you a lot of choice over who you're going to elect. It doesn't leave that in the party's hands.
And obviously it's been criticised a lot, fairly or unfairly, over the last while. And we've been discussing that, and we probably discuss it as time goes on under the next government as well, because there are various proposals for reform knocking around. But this is the system that we've got at the moment. So if I go into my privacy of the polling booth today, how best can I maximise the value of it?
Well, the first thing is that you vote 1, 2, 3, 4 in the order of your preferences. And you can go right down the list. If you are particularly concerned to make sure that somebody should not get elected, for example, as my wife is, she votes from the bottom up.
You figure out how many names are on the ballot sheet. Let's say it's 14. You figure out who's the person you dislike most and you put number 14 beside their name.
And you work your way up to number one or whatever, a combination of those. That is the most efficient way of ensuring that somebody is not elected. Now, in terms of your first preferences, most people will simply vote for the person that they prefer. Many people, however, will take advice from their political party, the one that they support, in terms of maximising the number of seats that that party can get. In some constituencies, it's possible for some parties to get more than one seat. They can do that more easily if they split the vote between their candidates evenly. So if you are, for example, in Dunleary in the last election and you wanted to ensure that both Barry Andrews and Mary Hanafin were elected, you would listen to what the local party activists were saying in terms of who you should give number one to and who you should give number two to.
Although the local party activists are not always ad idem on these issues, and they might sometimes be looking to poach votes off each other or talking out of both sides of their mouths, as was alleged happened in Fianna Fáil and Dublin Central the last time out.
This is certainly a problem that parties find it very difficult. Leading candidates are very loath to surrender some of their votes to their running mates. Because, and it has happened a few times famously in the past, running mates suddenly take off. They find themselves elected and the leading candidate.
Now, regardless of what you say, I don't particularly like to be told what way to vote by a party, even if I am considering voting for that party. Can I try and be a bit cute? For example, can I try and figure out, well, I think that such and such isn't really in the shop of winning, but I want to make a protest vote and vote for that person, and I know that they'll probably be eliminated, and then where my vote, my number two preference will kick in and really have an impact on who's going to actually make it into a seat? Or might one get too clever and end up wasting one's vote?
One is in a dangerous situation there, because you can do that if you like, if you're absolutely certain that somebody isn't going to get elected. But there are candidates around the place who will do surprisingly well, and you could actually find yourself electing somebody who you don't really want elected. So it's not really an advisable strategy, particularly as nobody's really going to notice your protest. People don't read the results in that way. So you may be doing something which is personally gratifying, but actually it's not very much use in terms of the election.
And what happens to my vote? Say, for example, I vote number one for an individual and that individual is eliminated. But at the point of elimination, my number two, number three, number four and number five are already gone. Does the vote automatically go to my number six choice?
It goes through the list to the first available preference. In other words, all of those who are either elected or eliminated at that stage are disregarded, and the vote, whether it's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, the first available preference then gets the full value of that vote if you're being eliminated. And this can be very useful. It makes big difference in the later count.
And the full value is one thing, but the other way in which votes, of course, can be transferred or transfers come into play is if there is a surplus, if a candidate is elected, passes the quota, and their surplus is deemed to be able to have a relevant impact on the remaining candidates in the field. And I've always found it a bit confusing about how that is actually calculated.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that once a candidate has reached a quota, there will be a number of their votes which are actually not necessary to them. And the things about our voting system is it allows those surplus votes to be redistributed then in proportion to the second preferences expressed for that candidate.
What does in proportion mean in that?
That means that if there's 100 votes of a surplus And when we count up the second preferences of that candidate, we find that 50 of them are going to one candidate. The 50 will be transferred to that candidate.
That, let's say Joe Bloggs, as you say, he gets 1,200 votes. He only needed 1,100. There's 100 to be divvied out. Yeah. Is that calculated on all his votes, or do they just take a bundle of votes off the top to figure out which votes get transferred?
No, it's calculated. This is where it gets very complicated. If we're talking about somebody who is elected entirely with first preferences, then all of that person's votes are calculated, are recounted. And their second preferences worked out, and the votes are divvied up in terms of those second preferences. On subsequent counts, if somebody is elected just short of a quota and is elected through the transfer of somebody else's surplus, only that bundle will be counted to determine subsequent preferences. So it depends on the stage of the count that you're at.
So that's a less than perfect system, because you could, for example, see a geographical quirk that could send a bundle from a candidate to another candidate, and that geographical quirk might not be completely representative of the overall vote for.
This is true, and there is a slight difference in the Dáil and the Senate in the way these votes are counted, but it's very, very small statistical difference, because we're talking about a surplus which is already a reduced vote, and a surplus of a surplus.
So you get down to the heel of the hunt, and it's down to four or five votes across the whole thing. People might look to go back and have a full recount.
And they have been known to do this.
Indeed. I have to say, I love this stuff. I could talk about it for hours, and we will be doing so over the weekend, by the way, on Saturday and Sunday, as we follow the count. I think it's one of the glories of the Irish electoral system is the count, and you watch how the permutations play out across the 43 constituencies. But Paddy, thanks very much for explaining that to us today. That's it from today's podcast, but remember, you can follow this count live all through the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, as late as it takes. We'll be here. We have people in all the counting stations. We'll be in contact with them. We'll be following it all the way down to the wire. And don't forget to check in and buy your Irish Times on Monday morning, where we'll have a full supplement with all the results and all the counts. Talk to you soon.